Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Glad to see you all making it up bright and early. Some may be less bright than others. I won't mention any names. Now, firstly, I just want to have get an idea. Is everyone here working with FIM in some capacity? Yeah, most of you? Excellent. Have any of you actually tried developing custom workflow activities yet? Yeah, you don't have to answer. Okay, well, for those of you who haven't done anything with custom workflow, I hope by the end of this session you'll be ready to give it a go. It's going to be mostly demo today, and do feel free to ask questions as we go through. We're just a small group. I quite expected that. There's not that many of us who work with FIM. So let's make it interactive, okay? So there's my Twitter handle there and whatnot. You can come talk to me later. So rough agenda, when you should use custom workflow activities, how to cheat with PowerShell, because it's always important to know how to cheat with PowerShell, and then getting started writing coded activities. So just a couple of, you know, those of you working with FIM will know this already, but why do you use, what are the times when you want to use a coded workflow activity? As you may well know, the out-of-the-box FIM workflows are very much linear. Step, step, step. If they get to a step where they fail, they stop. There's no looping. There's no if, then, else. So if you need any of that kind of conditional logic, you need to go into a custom activity. The out-of-the-box activities are also rather limited, particularly the function evaluator, not doing multi-values and dates and various other things that you need. Custom workflows are also really good for single event actions. So some examples there, open service desk ticket, create home folder, license Office 365 account. So things where someone ticks something, someone sets something, an object transitions into a set, and you want to fire off some one-time action. Custom workflows are really good in these situations. If you're doing bulk operations or if you want to maintain values at you know, where they should be, then you're still better off doing that in sync rules. So first I'm going to talk about the open source PowerShell activity. Is anyone using this at all? Excellent. It's good, isn't it? So my dear friend Craig Martin wrote that, and he's one of the MVPs, and I use it all the time. It's a very nice, simple little activity that just does what it says. It runs a PowerShell script as part of your workflow. So okay, I'm just going to go through a couple of slides here. I'm going to show you this when we get to the demo, how to install an activity. So the basic steps are you have a compiled DLL, you put it in the global assembly cache, you then need to create a particular type of object in the FIM portal, you then need to restart the FIM service and restart IIS. There are some extra steps for the PowerShell activity which I'm not going to demonstrate, but I just put them here so you could have them as a reference. You can put this diagnostics listener in the FIM service config file, and that will then put error messages from the activity in the event log, so that's very handy. You do also need to add the PowerShell activity source to the application's event log for that to happen. Modifying the FIM service config file, there's a funny little thing you have to do to get the PowerShell activity you run to be able to run the FIM commandlet. So for it to turn back and do something through the FIM service, you have to make a minor change in the FIM service config file. So that's just documented there for you. You also have to think about who is going to run these scripts, under what context are they going to run. So by default, it's the FIM service itself running the workflow. It effectively runs the PowerShell script. However, the FIM service doesn't exist as a person object in the portal. So when the script turns around and tries to hit the FIM service back again using the FIM commandlets, you get an identity not found error. So all you need to do in that case is just create a person object for the FIM service, put the correct account name and the object SID on it, and that works just fine. You have other options. You could create a FIM PowerShell service account, and then you'd need to have your script actually creating the credential object. So saving that secure string into a file and actually loading up that credential object before it hits the FIM service. The new version of the PowerShell activity also has a tick box for impersonate requester. In that case, the script is actually running under the context of the requester. So that could be very useful in some scenarios. So let's go to the demo now. Like I said, keep this more demo and less PowerShell. Okay, so let's look first at installing the PowerShell activity. So if you go to the Codeplex site, you can download a compiled version for 2010 R2. And that is literally just this DLL. It also comes with a install script, and we'll just have a look at that. So the first thing this script is doing is putting the DLL in the GAC, the global, what do I call it, global access catalog? That one. So I will just, now you can also use GACutil, as I'm sure many of you know, but let's just use that script. And if we go into our GAC here, which is in C Windows Assembly, and I'll just refresh that. Oh, I don't. Okay, so that's the DLL. It's now present in the GAC. So that's the first step. Now, the next part of this script is actually just checking that it got there. This publish command here doesn't actually return any error if it fails. So he's just added an extra step here just to confirm it's really there. But we just confirmed that by looking in the folder. The next thing we're going to do is create that PowerShell source in the event log. Now, I've already gone and done the other modifications to the config file, which were documented in that slide, but I won't bother showing you those. The last step is to create this activity information configuration, rolls off the tongue, doesn't it, object in the portal. And, oh, look, I don't have my portal open here. It's not very good. Let's get that open. Now, he's using his own PowerShell module here to actually install this object. Now, you can create it manually. You can go into the FIM portal and just, and that's, if you read the Microsoft documentation, it walks you through just creating it manually. I find it much easier to do it from a script. However, I don't tend to use Craig's FIM PowerShell module. You're welcome to download that and use it yourself, but I just got to find what I've done with I had everything open and then I had to reboot my lab, as you do. Here we go. So I tend to use the this PowerShell PS1 library that comes from TechNet. Have any of you seen that? You can just, use that? Great, okay. So I just did my own little version. It's exactly what's in Craig's script, but it's just using the slightly different functions from that other library. So all we're doing is we're creating this activity information configuration object. We need to give it a display name and a description. We then tell it the class names. That's the workflow activity, and that's the UI bit that you see in the portal. And then this bit here, assembly name, that's actually telling it about that DLL in the GAC. So if we go back and look in the GAC, you'll see that that's got the same version number, the same public key token. So that's just addressing that DLL file. So I'll go ahead. And like I said, I could go in through the portal and just create that manually, but that is quite boring, really, so we won't do that. I should, however, get the portal up here so I can show you things in it. Okay, while that's waking up, let's have a look at the first script we're going to run. Oh, actually, I also need to do some restarting here. I need to do an IIS reset. The reason I need to do an IIS reset is because I've installed this new AIC resource and that changes the UI a bit. That makes this new workflow activity available in the workflow builder. So basically anything you do that changes the UI, you need to do an IIS reset or an app pull cycle, or you need to wait for the hourly refresh of the portal. The other thing I need to do is restart the FIM service so it picks up that new DLL. So while all those things are restarting, go back to the demo folder. So the first script I'm going to run as a workflow, I figured we may as well start with the classic. So I'm going to write hello world into a text file, and I'm also going to write it into the event log. So very simple. First, what's going on here? Oh, yeah, because I restarted it. That's right. Now, you all know after you do an IIS reset, you have to wait for the portal to wake up. Makes it a bit sleepy. There we go. Actually, I should we'll have a look at that resource we created. All resources. I did run it. Where is it? Did I get an error? Let's go back and try that again. I did get an error. Oh, because I haven't run that. I haven't actually run my function library. No wonder I got an error. Doesn't normally take that long. There we go. This is just a little VM on my laptop here, by the way, so I apologise in advance for it not being particularly performant. I even gave it more RAM, but anyway. So we should now see the PowerShell. There it is. So the PowerShell activity has appeared there. And that means that we can actually use it in a workflow. Make this an action. And all I have to do here is just tell it the path to that script. And I can add any script arguments as necessary. And there's that impersonate request to checkbox if I particularly want this to run under the as the requester. But I'll just let it run as the FIM service. Now, to make this simple to trigger these workflows, I've just added a simple Boolean attribute to the user object type, and just toggling that attribute is going to fire any workflow. So it's not a particularly representative example, but you know, we don't want to waste too much time on complicated triggering. So you see here my requester set is all people. I'm modifying a single value attribute. The attribute is this trigger workflow. And then all I got to do is pick what I want to run, which in this case is going to be that. So I'll just pick any user and trigger the workflow. So what should happen is, oh, that was very quick actually. There we go. So there's my text file. And if I go and have a look in the event log, F5 that, there we go. Anyone see that? Yes, good. So that was a bit boring, wasn't it? We're probably not going to write a custom activity that does that normally. Okay, so there are two ways to do it. One is you can have script arguments. The other way is the way I'm going to show you right now, which is workflow data. So script arguments are okay if it's a constant value, but more often than not, you want to send something a bit more dynamic to the script, like an object ID, like some particular thing you've just looked up or something that you've set. And so this is why you need to understand how to use workflow data. So workflow data are variables that exist just within that workflow instance while it's running. So you can set one at one step and then you can use it at the next step and so on. And if you've done anything with email templates, then you can also embed the workflow data in the email templates, which can be a very useful way of making those a bit more dynamic as well. So still a very simple script. What we're going to do this time is we're going to use this FIMWF variable. So that is something that is set by the PowerShell activity. It's a hash table, and it includes the requester ID, the target ID, the workflow definition ID, and also all these workflow data variables. We can both read it and also we can write back to it, which I'll show you in a bit. But this one, we're just going to read it. So the first thing we're going to do is take the request details from this FIMWF variable, and we're going to dump those out to a text file. And then we're also going to write a message into the event log again, but this time the message is actually going to be a bit more interesting and actually use the workflow data. So what I'm going to do now is change that workflow. And I've got this XAML saved here, so I'm just going to copy that in to the workflow. And then we'll have a look at it. Okay, so the first thing I'm doing is I'm defining this message and I'm saving it into workflow data message. And what it is, it's a concatenation hello, and then the display name of the target, and then from, and then the display name of the requester. Okay? And then I'm just going to run my demo 2 PowerShell script. So that's good to go. I didn't actually... That's just setting... If something doesn't have a value, it automatically sets it to false. We don't need to worry about that. But I do need to change which... Oh, no, actually, I don't need to change which workflow I'm calling, do I? Because I just modified the same one. So let's go and trigger it. Demo 2. So in a minute, we should see that file appear. Okay. So this is showing us the contents of that hash table. So as I said, request ID, target ID, actor ID is the request store, and the workflow definition ID. And then this workflow dictionary, that contains those workflow data values, and then we've also printed them out in a table down here. So we could have multiple workflow data values listed down here. So that's effectively just logging that request. Let's go have a look in the event log now, and there we go. Hello, I picked a hard name to say, didn't I? From administrator. Okay, so that's interesting. We now know how to pass a value out to the script. Of course, what we also want to do is pass values back. And you won't be surprised to hear that that's workflow data as well.
Can we just look at the script again to see
how to Sure. Can we look at the script again? So you'll see, I mean, I'm just passing message. So if workflow dictionary contains key message, well, that's if not. So this is just a throw condition. That's just checking that workflow dictionary really did, or workflow data really did have that message parameter. This is the writing the event log. So that's picking up that workflow data value. Okay, simple enough.
A little strongly typed object.
If you say so. Okay, let's go to the third script. So what I'm going to do here now is something that I think is a bit more useful than putting hello messages in places, and it's selecting a unique value. And the idea here is that we're going to generate a number of options, and this script is then going to choose the first one that is unique for that attribute and that object type. So obvious example, setting a unique account name. Okay? And You see here, I do actually have some script parameters, attribute name, object type. This one here is something that I always do myself in my scripts. I always have a way I can toggle verbose on and off, and if it's true, then I write lots of extra stuff into the event log. So let's have a look at this script. Now, first I'm loading the that PowerShell library. I'm also loading another library of my own with some extra functions in it. Now, where have I put that? I had all this stuff nicely open before. There it is. Okay, I don't have all the functions here that I normally use, but just some examples. Object exists. This does a... You can pass it an object type and a display name, and it'll construct an XPath filter and then tell you whether that object exists or not. Just, you know, utility functions. The only one I'm actually going to be using, I think, is the this write log one. So again, this is something I use all the time. This just allows me to simply put a message into the event log, and I can tell it which what level I want to be. And I also do this fatal. So if it's a fatal error, I say fatal is true. And I just want to show you this bit. What that then does is it throws whatever the error message is. And if you throw something in one of these scripts, that actually causes the activity to fail. And this message here gets written back to the request object. So that's really, really useful. And I'm going to show you, I'll show you that shortly. I'll show you one failing. So below that, what am I doing? So this is another thing I always do, just like a validation block, check we got everything we needed. And then it's just basically a loop for each parameter that I get from that workflow data. I'm just going to loop through, I'm going to construct an XPath filter, I'm going to see if I can export an object that matches that filter. If I can export it, it's a conflict, move on to the next one. Simple as that. Down the bottom, I'm actually going to return, if I found a value, a unique value, I'm going to return it in the workflow data, and this is as simple as adding a value to the hash table. That will then go back to the workflow. So, create a new workflow object for this one. And that doesn't have a V in it normally. Now this one I'm just going to again import from the XAML I've already got prepared, and then we'll come back in and have a look at it. Okay, so I've only defined two options here, but of course the idea is you could have as many as you needed to. I'll just edit that so it's readable. So, option one is going into workflow data, option one, and I'm just using the function evaluator. I'm taking the first character from the first name, and then I'm concatenating it with the last name. And I think my second option takes the first two characters from the first name and concatenates it with the last name. And of course, like I said, you could have many more options than that. I then run my script, and I'm interested in object type person. I'm interested in attribute name, account name. So this is then passing information as parameters to the script. And finally, if I get back a result, so remember, if this fails to find a unique value, I'm actually going to fail this workflow, so it won't actually get to the next step. If we get to the next step, we know we succeeded. And then we're just going to update. Again, I'll just edit that so we can read it. So we're going to update the target account name with the result that came back in workflow data. Okay, so pick someone. So you'll see actually his account name at the moment, this guy I've obviously already tested on, this guy, his account name is still using a different format, so what we should find is that it changes. And the other thing I can actually do while that's running is track it in search requests. And that's actually finished already, so that was the... Oh, wait a second. Do you know what I did? I didn't change the MPR. That hasn't done anything. That would have just written a message into the event log again. Okay, let's try that again. Okay, so now we should see a post-processing. Yeah. So that's my request. That's post-processing because it's running something. This actually will be already the new request triggered to set the account name. And you'll see that that's been triggered by the Forefront Identity Manager Service account. And that's who's running that script. And that should have all completed now. And there we go. So that person now has a new account name. Now, I promised we'd have a look at failure because I think that can be more interesting. So here I have three people with quite similar names, and this person doesn't have an account name yet, but you see the two options are already taken that my workflow allows for. So let's trigger the workflow on him. And we can look in search requests and see what's going on. It's post-processing. There we go. We've got a post-processing error. And if we go and have a look in here, you see, can you read that? Failed to find unique value for account name. So that's the message I've actually sent back from my script. But it's not very accessible here. An administrator can find it. The user doesn't see it. So you have another option, and that is to actually run the workflow in the authorization phase. Now, if you run something in the authorization phase, it happens before the change is committed to the database. And in this case, our change is just ticking a box, but in a more realistic situation, it might be changing the person's surname. And we're going to say, actually, you know, we're not going to let you change their surname until we're absolutely sure we can generate a unique account name for that surname. Yeah, maybe. I mean, everything's possible. So let's do an authZ version of that. I'm actually going to import exactly the same XAML file as before. So it's exactly the same workflow configuration. It's just running in the authorization phase now. And I need to change my MPR. Remember to do that this time. So we're going to do it there. And we're not going to do it there. So let's trigger that workflow again. Now, what we should get is a denied, an access denied. And this is because FIM interprets any failure in the authorization phase as an access denied. And it might seem a bit odd that failure to choose an account name is an access denied, but from FIM's point of view, what the authorization workflow is doing is giving permission to commit that change that the user made. And that's what it's denying. And if we go into view details, we can actually see the error message there. So that can be quite a lot, you know, more helpful for your users if you have situations where you want them to get some information back about why their request failed.
What would that have looked like in R1,
that error message? I don't think R1 showed you these nice error messages, so this is an improvement in R2. So I'm going to leave the PowerShell activity at this point and move on to coded activities. But before I do, does anyone have any questions about using the PowerShell activity? No, we're all good. We're going to go and download it afterwards.
Were there any tricks involved in getting it to work under the authSet step? Like the first time you tried it, it worked?
Tricks to getting it working are just what I've put in the slides already. So just those things about making sure you know what context it's running under, making those modifications to the config file. So they're really the only tricks, I would say. Otherwise, just, you know, I do use a lot of workflow scripts in my environment, and just be, you know, consistent with them. That's why it's really good to have these function libraries to call upon, have a really consistent layout to your scripts, and, you know, always have an option to turn on verbose logging, and those things will help you greatly. But otherwise, I think it's an absolutely fantastic way to quickly get up and running with custom workflows and develop what you need very quickly. So let's move on with a few more slides. So look, the PowerShell activity is great. I love it. But sometimes you do need to write a coded activity. Now, firstly, that little trick I just showed you where you ran it in the auth z phase and it popped up that message. If that script takes too long to run, the user sees pending authorization. It's not pending authorization at all. It's just running your script in the background. So there is a slight lag, a time delay in shelling out to PowerShell and then querying back in through the web services. The same process will run quicker in a coded workflow, which is effectively running inside. So for auth z phase, especially when I need to give some feedback, I do tend to go to the coded activity. Now, I got told off by Craig for this next one because he said PowerShell scripts should be just as stable and version controlled as code. And of course he's right, but I mean, quite often they're not, aren't they? You know, they're seen as an admin tool. They don't come under the same scrutiny as compiled code. So there may be a thing where you really don't want this particular workflow to be messed with, and it's less likely if it's compiled in a DLL. The other thing is the customizable UI. So in the PowerShell activity, all we had was we could type in the path to our script and we could tick whether it was the impersonating the requester or not. With a coded activity, we can add a lot more detail to that workflow definition. There are also certain features that are only available in a coded activity. There's this little thing they added in R2, authorization after action, and that's to get around this step where you want an action to actually then trigger a change which is subject to approval. So, for example, person transitions into a particular set, which is always an action, that triggers a change, but you want that change to be approved. In R1, that was not possible. In R2, it is possible, but you have to write a coded activity. It's very simple. You literally just have to set one parameter to true, and then it works. But at the moment, that's the only way you can do that. So can we see that? So this is a list of the building block activities that come in the DLL, the FIM DLL, that you add to your project when you're developing a workflow. And I've just put a link there to the documentation. Now, I just want to point out that they're not all supported for using custom workflows. So only the ones that I've put green boxes around there are actually supported. And you'll see they're all very much the CRUD activities, basically. So we can create a resource, we can delete a resource, we can update a resource. We can also look up a resource, the read resource activity, and enumerate. We can search for resources. So these are the ones that are supported. However, I will say that these ones are also commonly used. And you will find if you download other people's code samples they've put on CodePlex or on their blogs, you will see these activities being used. They're just not supported.
Resolve grammar used to be broken for quite a long time. Is it still broken?
The resolve grammar, people still use it. I've never used the resolve grammar because of the don't use this, this is unsupported. I have, however, used the notification one quite a lot, the email notification. So, who has followed these walkthroughs? Has anyone done them? No. Okay. So, I'm not going to take you through these walkthroughs. They exist. They're on MSDN. You can follow them yourself. I suggest you do if you want to work with custom activities. The demo today is going to start from a point of you've just finished the walkthrough. What are you going to do next? I don't see there's much point in repeating what's already in those walkthroughs. So let's go into the demo again. And basically what I'm going to do is rewrite that select unique PowerShell script as a coded activity. Let's jump into Visual Studio. Now, I should just add that I very much come from an ops background, not dev. So if I can do this, anyone can. Let's have a look at first how our library looks when we've finished the walkthroughs. The walkthrough takes you through creating a very simple activity, which actually does pretty much what my demo 2 did. It dumps out the request details to a text file. That's all it does. And to do it, we use one of the FIM building block activities. So here's my FIM building block activities. I haven't put all of them in there. I've just put all the ones that I put boxes around. And we're using the current request activity, which is just get the current request. And then we have a code activity, which dumps the information into a file. Very simple. In the UI, so you see we have two classes here. This is our request, this is our workflow. This is our workflow itself. And down here, this is the little UI bit that actually appears in the portal. So I just want to show you the main point of the UI class, which is down here. And it's this. It's just creating a table. And in that table, in fact, I'll just make this a bit smaller, we have two variables, log file path and log file name. And that's the whole point of all the other code around it, just to give people a way to type in those two values. Now, the first thing I'm actually going to do is compile this. And that's because I want to show you the build event. So you remember when I'm installing a custom workflow activity, I have to put the DLL in the GAC, and I use that script before to do it. You can also use GAC util, which comes with the Windows SDK. You have to install the .NET tools from the Windows SDK to get it. Now that's not where I want it to be. Here, properties. Now in my dev environment, what I do is I use a build event, a post build event, to actually put the new version of the DLL straight in the GAC for me. So you see the first thing I'm doing here is actually running GAC util. That's just the compiled DLL there. And then I actually restart the FIM service. So obviously you only do this in your dev environment. When you're then deploying the DLL to your test and production servers, you could then use the PowerShell script or copy. In fact, you can just copy gacutil.exe itself across to the other servers and use it there. It seems to work perfectly fine like that. So we should now find that, if I refresh this, we should now find it's not in the GAC. Did I get a failure? Gosh. No. Did I build it? I did build it, didn't I? Let's try that again. Well, that's interesting.
Check the application event logs here to build the restarts in the restart from the second to last two steps would be in your application event log, is that right?
Don't know how many times I've practiced this and it's worked perfectly every time. No, that's just my failure from failing those activities before. That's bizarre. Build solution. Did I mention I'm not a developer? Build succeeded. I'll just check it has actually. This one. What's that? That's not rebuilt.
Try to rebuild.
Try the rebuild. Okay. Rebuild. Rebuild all started. Does that look better? I've got to wait for that to complete it, don't I? That date hasn't changed. I'm not using this one, am I? Oh, there we go. It's in a different folder. I was in my backup copy of it. Let's see if we've got it in the GAC now. That's more like it. There it is. So that was the PowerShell one we had there before. This is my new one. Okay. Whew, all that just to get a file in a folder. My goodness. Anyway, I've got the PowerShell set up here already, so I can just create that AIC resource for the request logging activity. And because I've changed the UI, I'm going to have to do an IIS reset. So I'll just leave that happening in the background and we'll start looking at building our next activity. So I'm going to be doing a bit of copying and pasting and stuff now. Bear with me. The reason I want to do this is because I think you can create the request logging activity and go, great, that worked. Now what? So I want to show you how you can use that as a basis for your next activity. And then I think once you've done that, you'll be off and running. And so the other interesting thing is that if you follow both the walkthroughs, one of them is actually about setting up a workflow library. And you can actually add more activities into the one library, so they'll be in the one DLL. And that's what I'm going to do here. I'm going to create a new activity in this library. So add a new activity. So here we are on the design surface for the select unique activity. And so the first thing I'm going to do is build up how I want my workflow to look. Now, I always start with a code activity. And actually, have I got the names? I might just got to make sure I use the right names for these things. So this is going to just get the options from workflow data. I'm then going to need a loop. I'm going to get the options from the workflow data and then I'm going to loop through them looking for a unique one. So I will use a while loop. Now with this while loop activity, you can only put one activity inside it unless you use the sequence activity. And that just purely allows you to put several steps inside that while loop, which I'm going to need to do. I'll show you why in a second. So I'm going to start with, this is a FIM building block activity, and it's the enumerate resources activity. And so this, I can pass an XPath filter to it, and it will look up what objects in FIM match that XPath filter. But the thing about these building block activities, and in a way it's a little bit unfortunate that they chose the request logger for the only documented walkthrough, because it's also the only building block activity that doesn't need any inputs. You just kind of stick it in and it gets the current request. All the other ones need parameters to be fed into them so they can work. And to do that, we need to put a code activity in front of them. And so I'm going to rename this to this. I'll tell you about these other properties shortly. The code activity I'm going to call prepare enumeration. And then I'm also going to need another code activity afterwards to evaluate any outputs from that activity, which is in this case how many matches it found. And my final step it's going to be another code activity, is to return any result I found. Okay, so that's basically, let's get that out of the way. Just showing how my workflow is going to look. Now let's have a look at the code behind that. It's just generated this very simple, you know, piece of nothing for me. The first thing I'm going to do is make sure that I've got all the right reference files here, or reference classes. And to do that, I'm just going to go to, actually, let's have a look at the code of that. Just go to the request logging activity and copy the same ones from there. The next thing I'm going to do in the design surface here, you'll see I've got lots of exclamation marks. And that's just saying there's nothing actually behind this little box you've put here. Very simply, all I need to do is go through double-clicking on these and it generates a little procedure for me. It's an empty one. I have to fill it in myself. I've still got to do some work. But I'll just go through that now, double-clicking on all of those. And there I've got all my little procedures just waiting for me to fill them in. So what I like to do is stick a region around these so I can keep them all together. Okay, and then I can actually just fold them away if I want to. Now, the next thing I need to do is attend to this FIM building block activity. We'll have another look at the properties of that. You see it's got a bunch of parameters here, and they're all kind of set to default values. That actor ID, that just represents the FIM service, essentially. Some of them have no value at all, some of them just have default values. Now, we don't want that. We actually need to be able to set these values to particular things. For instance, this XPath filter. We need to be able to set that. Here is the filter we want you to use to look up objects in the FIM portal. And it's a very simple thing you do. You right mouse click on that and you say promote bindable properties. And in the code, that's now gone and added all these dependency properties. And the great thing about all of that is we don't need to touch it. I'm just going to put another region around it and then I'm going to tuck it away and ignore it. I call that workflow properties. All right. So that's actually done. Now I want to jump over to the UI now, before we come back and fill in the code activities. And this is because we need to configure the parameters that we're actually going to use from the workflow activity. And actually, I'm just going to, the reason I wanted to get that request logging activity before it was installed was just so I could show you what its UI looks like. Because again, we're going to use that as a basis. That's not it. What am I doing? Oh, no, because I was going to add an activity. Okay. Request logging activity. So that now appears. Select. And you see it's pretty simple. It's just got two text boxes. You can add other things in here. You can add check boxes. You can add drop downs, whatever you want. But we'll just follow the same approach and use text box inputs for our new activity. So I need to create a new class, and this one's just a class. The last one was an activity, this one's a class. Select unique UI. Okay, let's have a look at that. So what I'm actually going to do is just go to this one and copy and paste the whole lot. Now, I'm then going to have to fix some things. So firstly, this class name is now wrong. I will just copy the one that I have in my backup copy here. And this is where I'm now going to do some finding and replacing, okay? So bear with me. I need to change that. And yeah, we'll change. Oh, didn't want that to happen. Change that to select unique. I'm also going to change that one. Now, the other thing I'm going to do is the request logging activity had log file name and log file path. Just as in my PowerShell, when I passed object type and attribute as parameters, I'm effectively just going to do the same thing here. These are going to be my two parameters. So I'm going to replace log file name with object type, and I'm going to replace log file path with attribute, replace all. And that's not right. That shouldn't have request in front of it. We'll just fix that. Now, I've still got some squiggles under here. I'll show you in a minute why that's happening, but there's a whole lot of sort of code in here, and when you follow the walkthrough, it'll tell you to paste all these things in. Mostly it's just boilerplate, though, and you can just adapt this exact code to your future workflows, putting in extra fields as you need. And the main important, I'll just change that there, change that name. The main point, as I said before, is this table down here. And now we're going to be adding text attribute and object type. I will just change these bits of text here. That's going to appear in the workflow so people know what to fill in there. Enter the okay, and that's just a description that appears in the field before they fill it in. You've probably seen those sorts of things. Okay, so that's pretty much done. Now, the reason why I've still got these squiggles here is because these parameters also need to be defined in the activity class, and that's the way that the two are going to communicate with each other. And so we need to go back here, and again, I'm just going to use what's in the request logging activity as my basis. So in the request logging activity, I've got a section here called UI properties. And I'm just going to copy that whole region. And this is where I define those input properties so that the workflow knows about them. Of course, I'm going to have to do some finds and replaces again. So I've got. Now, can anyone remember? Did I change log file path to attribute name? Or I don't think it matters actually. As long as they're defined. Okay, is that all my squiggles gone away? These descriptions here, I go through and set them, but they don't seem to appear anywhere. I don't know if they're just to actually help you when you're looking in the code. Make an extra comment. And yeah, I should probably change those comments as well, but anyway. You get the picture, yeah? So, we can close that away. Now, we still need to come back and fill in these code activities. They're still empty, and it's not going to work if they do nothing. And for that, I'm just going to copy and paste from what I've got here, and then we'll step through them. So, I've got some global variables I'm going to define. And these are mostly to do with controlling that while loop. So Boolean found, Boolean done. It's pretty obvious, isn't it? That's just for that while loop. I've also defined the containing workflow at a global level because we're going to use that object to access those workflow data parameters in one code activity, that top one, and then in the bottom one, we're going to use that object again to return back our result. So I don't have to look it up twice. I just declare it globally and that's job done. Now, here's my code activities. Okay. So the first one, does everyone see that? It's clear enough, isn't it? So the first one, this is where I'm getting the containing workflow, which allows me to access the workflow data. Here I'm just, again, that looks very similar to the PowerShell, doesn't it? Containing workflow, workflow dictionary. And here I'm just actually sorting the list, option one, option two, option three, so I just want to make sure I get them in the right order. And I also make a little list. Yeah, this one here, I'm making sure I just get the ones that start with option and putting those in the list then I'm going to use in my while loop. Because you could actually have other workflow data in that workflow as well for other reasons. So now down to inside the while loop. So remember I said we needed a code activity in front of that enumerate resources activity to kind of feed the parameters into it. And that's what this one is doing, prepare enumeration. So these are all those properties that we defined when we did the promote bindable properties and it put all that code in our project here. And basically our system GUID, that's saying just run it as the FIM service. I could specify a particular person if I wanted to there, or I could set it to the requester. And the main thing here is there I am building up the XPath filter. So we search on object type where the specified attribute equals the current option that's come through from workflow data. And then we set that XPath filter here. So when we get to the next code activity, that enumerate resources has now run. We're now at the other side of it. And we want to see what it came back with. So here it's just very, very simple. How many matches did you get? If it's zero, we win. We just found a value that something doesn't already have set on it. And our final step is if we found a value, then again, should look very similar to how it did in PowerShell. We just add a new workflow data parameter and we return the current option that we're on when we found a good result. So that's basically it. Oh, it's not basically it. There's one thing I still haven't done. If I go in here, I've still got an exclamation mark. And that's because I haven't actually set the parameters of my while loop yet. So I'll show you now how I do that. I'm going to do a declarative condition. New. So while it's not done, keep looping. Okay, easy stuff. There we go. So the while loop's now happy. No more exclamation marks. I should be able to go ahead and build this. I'm gonna try that rebuild again. I didn't like the way the build didn't work for me before. So rebuild all started, rebuild all succeeded. And hopefully my GAC should have just been updated with that build event. If I look in the properties here, 912, yep. So that just got updated. And it also would have done the restart of the FIM service for me, so the new DLL is registered. I don't need to restart IIS again because, what am I talking about? I do, I haven't installed the activity yet. Yes. If I was just updating a DLL and I'd already created all the AIC resources, then I wouldn't need to restart IIS. But as it turns out, I actually need to create a new AIC resource for my new activity. So I will need to do an IIS reset after I've just done this. And we'll just have to wait for that to finish. While we're waiting, any questions on any of that so far? No? Happy to make it available. I'll probably just put it on my blog. It's the easiest thing. Everyone know my blog? Just Google me and you'll find it. Okay. So, portal, workflows. Okay, first let's just make sure we got our new AIC resource. Did I? Yeah, there we go. So you see it down the bottom there, select unique. That's now appeared as a new activity I can use. And what I'll do is just change this one. So we'll still have the same options as before. But we'll switch it to a coded activity. Okay, and I just need to put that up in the same position as the PowerShell one, and we can get rid of that. So now I won't use him because he's my error condition. Someone else. And I don't really care if this fails because I'm going to show you next how to debug. It should work if I did all my find and replaces properly. pending approval. Why did I get a pending approval? Oh, you know what? Because I'm still running. Actually, that was a great example. You know how I said if you run a PowerShell activity in the authorization phase and it takes too long to run? Well, that's what happens. You get pending approval instead of the error. So that was because I hadn't actually modified my MPR to run the action, and I was still running that PowerShell activity in the auth Z phase. So that was an unexpected demonstration of that. Okay, that should actually go, yeah, because it's not running anything in the auth Z phase. The window goes straight away. And we can have a look here, and again, we can see it's post-processing. That actually looks like it's worked because we got another triggered request which set the new account name. So all fine. Right, but what I wanted to show you was how you can debug this. And the way to do that is to attach to the process. I've got a squiggle there, doesn't matter. So let's go debug, attach to process. And the one you want to attach to is this one here, Microsoft Resource Management Service. Now, just a couple of points to note. You may need to tick these options down the bottom to see it, and you need to have this option here selected. And then we can just attach to that process. And the next thing is just to go through and stick in some breakpoints. Okay, so I'm going to trigger that again. And we should see it go into the debugger. And there we go. And now, of course, we can step through it, and we've got our variables down the bottom, and we can inspect values of things. And I'm sure you all know how to proceed from that point. So that's the end of the demo. Before I go back to the last couple of slides, I don't have very much left to go, but are there any more questions about that? Yeah?
The
There's no problem at all. It's absolutely fine. Absolutely. Yep. Yep. Absolutely no problem with that at all. Yeah, I do that regularly. I should also add as well that I've obviously shown you a very simple example here, and when I actually wrote a very similar activity, which I think was probably my actual first activity to go into production, for a customer to do this exact type of thing, I added some extra bells and whistles. So one of the things is I had a regex that would remove any characters that were not in the regex, which is obviously if you're doing an account name, that would be very useful. I also had another checkbox if I wanted to replace accented characters. So again, you can add... and the other thing that I always do, again, you know, with the PowerShell activity, I had that verbose switch. My coded activities always have a logging option as well, which is just a, you know, verbose and normal. So obviously this is just to get you started, get you on your way, but there's a lot more that you can do and extra options you can add. So let's go back to the last couple of slides. Okay, so that's just a picture of what you've already seen, in case you want to look at it later. Again, that's telling you how to do the debug. And just some references for you. So there's the address for that PowerShell activity. One of the other MVPs, Soren, has also uploaded his entire workflow library to Codeplex, and he's got, I don't know, 5 or 6 activities in it. So you can download that and have a look at it, use his code, or use it as a way to figure out how to write your own activities. And there's an address for my blog. And otherwise, I have another session tomorrow where I'm talking about identity in a much broader sense. So actually won't be talking about FIM very much at all, believe it or not. A little bit of FIM. Always got to have a little bit of FIM, but be talking about lots of other things as well, Azure AD and Server 2012 ADFS. So it should be a good talk. And I'm also going to be down in the exhibitors hall all this afternoon at the Unify and Optimal IDM booth. And if you haven't been to see us yet, Optimal has some really neat virtual directory stuff going on. So you should come down and have a look because it's very, very cool. And that is the end of my slides. Any more questions, or are we all happy with that? So who's going to go home and write a custom workflow? Yeah? One guy. Yeah, I should have a prize. Ah, oh, someone else? Okay. Send me an email. Let me know how you go, okay? All right. Off you go. Enjoy the rest of your day.